Now, a couple of weeks ago, Richard Collins was here with me in studio talking about a trip he had made to France. He was mainly visiting sites relating to World Wars One and Two, and in the town of Béthune, his guide happened to mention an Irish woman.
This lady was talking about the war there, and she mentioned a Sister McCarthy, whom she said was a Franciscan from Cork, who was decorated. So I said, well, that's a beauty. I'll look that up when I go home. But I tried to find information about her on the internet and places, and I could find nothing.
So if anybody knows anything about a Sister McCarthy from Cork and why she is so important, please get in touch. Well, what happened next is we got a phone call from another nun, a Sister Breda McCarthy, and she said Sister Kate McCarthy was my aunt. It was only after her death that we learned of her involvement in both World Wars, but particularly World War II. She helped the French Resistance, was imprisoned, sent to a concentration camp, and led a quite extraordinary life, but never spoke about it when she got home. Well, thankfully, Sister Breda's family did a bit of digging and have pieced together the incredible life story of Sister Kate McCarthy. So we sent our man, Richard Collins, off to Abbey House in Rathfarnham to meet Loretto Nun, Sister Breda McCarthy, to find out more about this story.
Ami, entends-tu le vol noir des corbeaux sur nos plaines? Ami, entends-tu?
Morning.
Hello, are you Sister Breda?
I'm Sister Breda, yes.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
Well, I'm delighted to meet you.
You're great to respond to our request for information about your famous relative, so, and I'm very glad to be here. Now, I've been here before, but it was to the big house that you used to have, the big convent you used to have,
yes,
over the way.
Yeah.
I brought a swan there back in the 1980s who had only one wing, and we put him in your pond and he was there for years. I used to come back and see him every so often, but you haven't that house anymore, have you?
Unfortunately, no, and we loved the swans. There was a pond and we had loved the swans on them. And that house was sold at the end of the 1990s. We came here in about the year 2000 because it became impossible to maintain that house. The numbers were declining. We were all consulted, but none of us could see an apostolic work that could be continued from there. So it was decided to sell it.
And it's then a beautiful building. It's still there, I'm sure.
It's a preserved building. Mm-hmm. And we're in the hope now that we had a letter from a councillor there some months ago saying that Nama had sold it to the Department of Education. We're going to use it as a Gaelscoil. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be Gaelscoil Fiershig. Mm-hmm. So we're still hoping that that might go ahead, because that would be wonderful.
Not that this building isn't beautiful. This is a modern building. What do you use this for? This is a lovely place, and
yes,
fountains outside and nice sounds and so on and so forth. And very rural in a sense for a part of the city. But however, go on, tell me.
Yeah. It was built for the elderly sisters. It was purpose-built so that our elderly sisters could be here and cared for. And people come here on respite. So we have elderly sisters and we have people who come on respite after operations and various things, you know. And also we were fortunate in that we were able to keep our cemetery where our foundress, Teresa Ball, came. She came here too in the Abbey in 1821, and she's buried out there and Russia's sisters since then.
Well, Sister Breda, of course I'm here to get all the information on your famous relative, Kate McCarthy.
Well, I'd be delighted to tell you, Richard, anything that I know. I just knew her to meet her personally, but she never spoke of her war experiences. But some material, my cousin Con wrote an article in the Drummond League community newsletter in 2000, and that was the first information that we got together. And then subsequently my cousin Eileen in England wrote to the French, some of the French departments, and got some archival material on her so that we know the dates of her arrest, her prison number, all that sort of material. So will you come inside and we can chat about that?
Thank you, I'd love to.
I'm bringing into what's called the parlour.
Pretty nice. It's lovely. Yeah. Beautifully furnished.
It's a small room, but it's comfortable. It's very comfortable. It's adequate. Yes. There's a picture of our foundress, Teresa Ball, on the wall. She was the foundress in Ireland. Mary Ward was the original English foundress. She began the order in 1609, and then Teresa Ball brought the congregation to Ireland in 1821 and started the first school in the Abbey and in Grange Road, the primary school.
Sister Breda, you and I have something rather extraordinary in common. And it is this. I had an aunt, a nun, just as you had. And she was a nursing sister and she served during the war. She served in London during the Blitz. And after that, she transferred to France, where she spent the rest of her days over in Annemasse, with the Sœur de Saint-Joseph in Annemasse, in not so much Annemasse, Haute-Savoie, that area, beautiful part of France. And when she died 2 years ago at the age of 96, there was among her possessions a medal, a decoration from the French government. Now, why she got this, I don't really know. But of course, your aunt had a very similar kind of a story, is very famous, much more distinguished. I shouldn't be comparing her with my aunt Malachy. Tell us, where was Kate McCarthy born and when?
She was born in Drumminity, North Drumleague, in Cork. She was one of five girls and four boys in 1895. And then she entered the Sisters, the Franciscan Sisters of Calais in Montanate in Cork.
How did the Franciscan Sisters from Calais come to be in Cork? Aren't there ordinary Franciscans, Order of Friars Minor and Friars Capuchin, yes, among the men? Is there not an equivalent among the women? Or where does the Franciscans of Calais fit in?
Well, to be honest, I don't know, because I never asked Auntie Katie about the origins of her vocation at all. I think at the stage when I met her, I would have been between 8 and 21, you know, and I was entering myself, actually, you know. It would have been a natural question to ask her, but I didn't. We used to go to visit her when we were children with my father, and she was a very gentle, kindly lady, you know, but she never spoke of her war experiences.
Now, it's about 1913 she has entered, and she is sent off to Calais, to the sister, yes, the mother house of the order, I suppose, and, yes, became a nurse there. And then she went to Béthune. You see, I heard about her in Béthune. She's famous in Béthune. Béthune is a beautiful town, 24,000 people, a lovely place. It was obliterated in 1918, when your aunt would have been there probably. It was a famous place, a hospital place for soldiers, that kind,
yes,
of thing.
That's right.
It's gorgeous,
yes,
now. They haven't restored it, they rebuilt it in our deco,
yes,
form and so on,
yes,
and so forth. But it's a beautiful place. But the guide taking us around this, up on the big belfry, a beautiful 48 metre high structure in the middle of the square, started talking about this lady, Kate McCarthy from,
yes,
Ireland. And,
yeah,
I said, my God, I've never heard of her. Yeah. But, and she's still remembered there,
imagine,
to this,
that,
day.
Yeah.
But tell us about her life in Béthune.
Well, it seems she was there when the 1914 war broke out, nursing some of the Allied soldiers. But really what has come down to us is more her activity in helping Allied soldiers escape during the 1939-45 war. And she was in Béthune and nursing there. She was linked with the French Resistance, and she was in, I think, an organisation, Musée de l'Homme. She helped the prisoners, you know, to escape. And then she was arrested in Béthune on charges of spying. She was sent from Béthune to Saint-Gilles. In 15, that she was condemned to death, but it was reprieved for some reason.
And there was another man. There was a man convicted as well, another member of the resistance, and with her, wasn't he? And he was shot, I think.
Yes, I think so. Yes, I don't know why. You know, she was reprieved.
How did she manage to get out of this? Because she was a nun and not English, or would that have helped?
I don't know really what would have made any difference. You know, she must have said her prayers well. Anyhow, I just wondered, yeah, myself, you know, how I would be if I was told that I was condemned to death, you know, and the prospect of facing death, you know, how would I feel about it? But anyhow, she was transferred from there to Lübeck in Germany. I read also in some notes that I read, she spent a whole year in solitary confinement. She was transferred from there to Cottbus, you wouldn't pronounce it like that, I'm sure, in Germany, C-O-T-T-B-U-S. And she was in that prison in Germany. And then in December 1945, just before the ending of the war, she was transferred to Ravensbrück concentration camp. Now, to my shame, my father gave me, when I was began to study French, some series of short articles that were written in a French newspaper on my aunt. And to my shame, I lost them. But I remember reading in that that the primary thing that helped her to survive was her faith, but also the companionship. They were transferred, it seems, by alphabetical order from one prison to another. And so a little group of them got to know each other very well. And so that was an enormous support to them when they were transferred from one prison to another. They had enormously hard labour. You know, they were had very, very little to eat. I know my aunt at one point, it said in one of the articles I read, that she was so reduced to skin and bone and so lacking in energy that she had to be allowed a couple of days not to go out on the work that they were doing. That they worked from morning to night and then they got a thin soup or something to eat. But conditions were extremely hard, as we know they were in the camps, you know, in the prisons. Her number in the camp was 85470.
Ravensbrück, of course, was a women's camp, and looking it up and trying to get some information on it, I find that something like one woman in five survived it only. Really? The rest all died or were gassed when they became.
That's right, yeah.
When they became. But she was rescued, of course, by the famous Swedish count.
Yes,
isn't
yes.
that right?
Yeah, Count Bernadotte.
And then what happened?
And then she came back to London. He transferred, got her transferred. No, I think it was into maybe Scotland or Wales first, and subsequently back to London. She stayed in a convent, I don't know whose convent actually, in London. And then she went to my uncle, who happened to be a doctor in London at the time. And so he cared for her for a period of time. And then she came home to Tipperary, to my father's and our home. I don't remember, I was six at that stage, you know, I was born in 1940. Mm-hmm. But my sister remembers her sitting under an apple tree in a deck chair and skinny, skinny, skinny to the bone, you know. Mm-hmm. I only remember the little footstool that was bought for her to rest her feet on. I loved to rock my doll on it, you know. It was a little rocking footstool.
Indeed. Well, now she came back to Cork. Where she'd come from as a nun. And the next thing, I believe, is that the decorations start to pour in.
She was decorated
in various ways. Tell us a little about that.
I know she was decorated by the French government. I know she got an award from the underground resistance movement. She got this emblem of the black cat, Le Chat Noir. Mm-hmm. President de Gaulle, I think, you know, spoke about her.
And she was one of the few nuns who became a soldier, an actual officer in the British Army.
She did, actually, yes. Yeah, she was nominated as a lieutenant or something in the Army.
That must be against the rules to be a soldier in the Army when you're a nun. That's
we
very strange.
We are soldiers in the Army of Christ.
Yeah, but you don't go out killing people and things like that. At least I hope you don't.
That's what St. Ignatius said. And we were to be gentle as doves.
So
kind.
Kate McCarthy went to France to meet de Gaulle and get her decoration from the great man himself. That's in the records. And the black cat, that's an interesting one, because we're a wildlife program, Mooney Goes Wild, and we don't have a black cat. Cats have a funny relationship with the war.
Really?
Yeah. The cats, you can't get cats to do things, you know, because cats, they won't obey you. But
really?
The British, in First World War, in 1914-18, they requisitioned 500,000 cats.
My goodness!
I'm told. And they put them in the trenches to keep the rodents at bay and this kind of thing.
Oh, so they're clever.
Yeah, and there was a famous... it was illegal during the Second World War to give your cat milk.
Really?
Yes, in England, I understand. And that you could get a ration of powdered milk for a cat that was working for the war effort. Now, a cat working for the war effort would be a cat protecting stores of food. If he was working around he'd get this bribe. You know, there's a famous Sebastopol cat. Did you hear of him? I'm getting carried away at this.
Yes, I had. I did hear of it, but I don't know anything about it.
He was in the siege of Sebastopol in the Crimean War.
Yeah.
The soldiers were all starving and so on. But this cat was fat and lazy around the place. And they began to wonder, how is the cat making out so well when we were all starving? So they followed the cat. And the cat led them to an underground place where there was food stored. And he had a way into it. And they all got the food. The food, a lot of it was gone off, but there was enough there to keep them alive. And the Sebastopol cat became famous for having served them. But anyway, we're getting carried away on the... I wonder where the black cat thing comes
from. I see from my article here, she also received the cat emblem from the Maquis, the French underground movement. So it doesn't say any more than that about it. She travelled to France to be decorated for bravery by General de Gaulle himself. Winston Churchill, too, gave her a citation, as did the chief of staff of the RAF. Soon afterwards, she received further recognition from the British government when they conferred on her the rank of lieutenant in the forces.
Now, it just intrigues me because you have the impression nowadays that nuns were extremely strict in the old days. They didn't not even become lieutenants in the army, for instance, you know. But this impression we have is that she was there getting fellas smuggled out through the enemy lines and all kinds of strange things like this, and cavorting with the Maquis, you know. And they must have been a choice lot. The guys in the Maquis were no angels, I would have thought. And for her to be rubbing shoulders with these people, was it quite as rigid as we think in those days in convents?
Well, I have unfortunately not been able to get in touch with Auntie Katie's own religious congregation, the French Franciscans of Calais. Now, I've rung a number of times and I don't know how much. They probably have some material, you know, on her, you know, that would be very interesting, you know, because I imagine those emblems were kept in their archives, you know.
Well, now, the only thing that occurs to me is she must have been a very larger-than-life character. But what was she like when you met her? Was she... must be hard to contain her after such a history.
No, Lord, no. She was almost sober, steadfast and demure, you know, to use a phrase from something that I learned as a child. She was quiet in her demeanour. You know, we would go in, she would throw her arms around us and greet us very warmly, you know. We would go and have tea, you know, in the convent parlour, and sometimes some of the other sisters would come in, you know. And once, actually, she gave us a present of two gorgeous little dolls. They looked a bit like Barbies now, you know. And I remember her saying, "It gives me more pleasure to have these to give to you than it gives you to actually get them," you know. She was so delighted to have them to give to us. But she was gentle. She wasn't a bit effusive. I'm more effusive than she is, I would think now, you know. She kept her, what we called, hands custom in the old days, you know, the hands joined in front of her when she was walking, you know. She'd come out with us because the convent in Montenegro was beautifully situated, overlooking the Lee. And I was always fascinated by the evening boat, you know, the boat coming in the evening time. And she'd always bring us out to see that. And then there was a nice walkway down along. And we'd walk down there, you know. I remember nice summer's days being out with her. But she was very, very ordinary person.
Now, people who go through terrible ordeals, who've been in wars or had terrible things happen to them, very often they don't talk about it. It's a strange thing. To somebody who has never had anything dreadful happen to them, this seems odd that people, the psychotherapists say you should talk about things and get them out of your system and so forth.
Yeah.
What do you think? You're in the caring profession and knew all about that. So what do you think goes on in these situations?
Well, I had one in my life. When I was doing my 30 days retreat, I was down, ironically, in Montenotte in Cork, you know, and I was in the Dominican house. I was a bad sleeper, and part of the 30 days is that you get up at night to pray. Of course, I tried to get up at night, foolishly, and I lost my sleep completely for nights and nights. And it was a very, bad experience. Our congregation have always been extremely good and kind and caring, and two sisters came down from Dublin to bring me up to the doctor in Dublin whom I had been attending. For me, it was a very, I wouldn't use the word, yes, it's horrific, I think is the word I would use. It was a very, very hard experience. And I remember sitting, when I was feeling well again, I was out with my sister, Mary, in Cabin TD. I can still see myself sitting at the kitchen table and not being able to tell Mary one word of what had happened. I just could not mention it. I could not go there. The pain of it all was too deep in me. So I can understand how Auntie Katie, having been through all that, three prisons, solitary confinement, condemnation, all the rest of it, that she did not want to talk about it.
Now, for a lady that has worked through two world wars and faced concentration camps, imprisoned, a whole year of solitary confinement, sentenced to death, all these horrors, her life must have been shortened considerably. How long did Kate McCarthy live?
She lived until she was 76. She died in 1971. That's not a bad life, really, for somebody who's been through all that.
It is indeed. It is an extraordinary story, Sister Breda, and thank you very much for telling us about it.
It is a great joy, not just for me, a great joy for me, but I know for all my family, and they will be listening, and I send greetings to them all.
Oh, et partisans, ouvriers, paysans, c'est l'alarme.